With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me on this extremely rainy Wednesday evening is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, when we last spoke, we said we'd be back when the Islanders announced all of their eventual signings. And that was 2 months ago. And here we are, September 1st, talking about those very signings. So, you know, it was a very odd period that I think you and I will agree was a radio silence that was in part impressive. And a little bit frustrating and also endlessly hilarious for those of us that enjoy the comedy stylings of one Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah, I think you put it perfectly. I think in the beginning it was frustrating because you just want to know, you know, we're fans. We want to know who's playing for the team. And then it started to become hilarious. And when other fan bases started to get annoyed and like NHL insiders started to get annoyed, that's when, you know, that's when you could have really sit back and, you know, kick your feet up and really just kind of enjoy it, because it really seemed from the get-go like that these guys that we'll talk about today were signed from right away, and there was no reason to panic, and you kind of got that feeling pretty quickly on in the window, but like there still was that sense of dread. You just never knew. But as it became more and more clear that these guys were under the Lou Lamoriello cone of silence, like it was just fun. I mean, and like you said, impressive is the right word, because in today's day and age, like, come on, how that, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in this era of sports, in any sport, right. What Lou did.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, to think, you know, these guys didn't go into suspended animation. Like, they were out talking to friends, and their wives were talking to friends, their friends were talking to friends. Nothing got out at all, which is really something special. But the cone of silence has been lifted. The radio silence is ended. And we found out today a whole bunch of deals that, like you said, were probably signed a while back and were just registered with the league today. First of all was Casey Cizikas, who signed a 6-year contract worth $2.5 million a year. We'll talk about all these guys individually. You know, that was an impressive one. It's the longest, but also the cheapest. And we'll get to how those things are related in a minute. After that was Anthony Beauvillier, signed a 3-year contract worth $4.15 million a year, probably a little bit less than he was hoping for, but brings him, you know, 3 more years, gets him right up to that UFA contract, which again, we'll talk about in a second. On the other side of the line is Kyle Palmieri, signed for 4 years at $5 million a year, just a hair under what Jordan Eberle was making, play more or less the same position. You know, Palmieri probably more than anybody could have written his own ticket and walked to literally any other team and made more, but he wanted to stay. He fell in love with the Islanders. He's from the island originally and really wanted to stay. And then finally is Ilya Sorokin, who signed a contract worth 3 years, $4 million a year. You know, you can probably nitpick that. We'll get to it in a second. But, you know, that's a pretty good deal for a guy who showed that, you know, he could play in the NHL. All of these deals have kind of their pros and cons. But to be perfectly honest, I feel like the pros outweigh the cons. The big pro being that all these guys stay on the team together, which means that they all feel like they can win. And that's, you know, really Palmieri. If you haven't had a chance to watch the videos at the Islanders site, you definitely should. Well, Palmieri and Cizikas in particular talked about how, like, they want to win a Stanley Cup, and this is the team that they think can do that. None of these are like bank breaking deals. They're technically over the salary cap threshold right now, but Johnny Boychuk's LTIR is going to happen probably in a few weeks. That'll open up $6 million. So the $3 million that they're over by now will become, you know, $2 million extra that they can use. We'll talk about a fifth guy probably at the end of this first half. But what were your thoughts, I guess, first of all, on the big deluge of news? Like, all of a sudden we went from nothing to four guys being announced essentially at the same exact time. And the fact that all of these deals are pretty reasonable and in some cases probably actually really, really good was a weird feeling. Like, it, you know, it's the rare hockey Twitter moment that passes and everybody's like, oh, okay. And then we just kind of move on. Like, nothing really came of it after that.
Well, first of all, I want to say that it's not lost on me that today is September 1st. So Lou, they probably are like, hey, like, we got these done. When do you want to announce them? And Lou's like, hockey season starts in September. Like, you know, like, it's August. We don't, it's July. Right. We don't talk hockey. Like, we'll do it on September. And then they're like, hey, Lou, today's September. He's like, all right, fine. but I mean, I think if you, before the offseason, you know, and I'm saying, like, even before the Letty trade and the Eberle going to Seattle, Pellick, et cetera, if you had kind of been on cap friendly and you know, you and I go through all these iterations in our head and we're always talking about, oh, if this guy signs this deal, that means they have room for this or whatever. And if you, and most of the time you're either making you're either doing like a very conservative one because you want to be realistic and you know that, like, you're not going to get the perfect contract for everybody, or you go, and you just go, all right, I'll just, you know, do the pie in the sky one. And rarely is it kind of the what we, you know, ended up with, which is the kind of very reasonable contracts for everybody, because that just doesn't really happen in today's sports. Either right. You have to overpay, like for Barclay Goodrow, or, you know, someone signs a one-year, $1.1 million contract, and everyone's like, wow, that's a great deal. So it is funny. And I think also we all would have signed up for this kind of post off-season cycle and all these deals beforehand. If you had told me that we kept basically everybody except for Letty and Eberle, and that includes Palmieri, and you bring in Parisi, and, you know, probably some other depth forwards, then, yeah, I would have signed up for it. And I think a lot of people would have said, there's no way Luke could pull it off. And he did. But, and like you said, like, it's the fact that these guys are willingly choosing to stay is still not lost on us as a fan base, because we've been on the other side of that coin for so long of our fandom. And so, like, to hear Casey Cizikas, you know, I tweeted out today that he, like, basically wrote a sequel to Downeaster Alexa with, like, his quotes, which were, you know, very emotional and nice to read, because, you know, that's how we feel about the Islanders. And it's nice that this core of players, and Cizikas is obviously a huge part of that, and that this core of players is sticking around to see this thing through. Cause, you know, when the Islanders were in the first rebuild of the 2010s, the Tavares core with Hamonic and Oposo and Nielsen, et cetera, you figured that was the core, that those were the guys that were going to take this franchise to the next level, to bring them back to relevancy and then respectability or whatever. It is funny that it was kind of like the sub headline core of that group, like the Anders Lee Nelsons, and, you know, you figured that those were going to be the fill-in fringe players for that core, and it turns out that no, like, this Cizikas and Lee Nelson and these guys, Pellick and Pollock, like, this is the core that somehow ended up being the team to do it, to drag the Islanders into the light. And it's really nice because Cizikas and these guys, when you listen to them talk about it, I mean, even the way you listen to Franz Nielsen, and if you read that article that Arthur Staple wrote, you read what he said about like the culture sticking in those is like in the walls here now. And it was guys like Cizikas who bring it here. And he knows that, like, he knows how important he is to the fabric of this franchise. And that's why, like, him leaving, even if like his role could be replaced 1 or 2 years down the line, or even next year, whatever you want to say, like, yeah, he's not a superstar, but he's one of the best players at his exact role in the world. And, like, that this guy understands that he's an a sought after commodity is the point I'm trying to make. So he could like Palmieri go out there and get a big deal. And, but the fact that he recognizes how important that is, not just to like his teammates, but also the fan base, et cetera. Like that is, it's so cool because it's like his role of that he plays on the ice kind of also is the role he plays off the ice, which is selfless guy who understands that like the we is much more bigger than the me. And when you read these like these quotes, it's like it's really hard not to get caught up. And so to see that one and to finally be able to like exhale and be like, okay, it's done, and like this the band is getting back together with him and Martin and Clutterbuck is it was really, you know, touching stuff. It really
Cizikas definitely had the best quotes. And the first one you're going to see on 100 t-shirts, if you haven't already, is he's like, I'm going to die an Islander. That's what I want. And it's like, wow, dude, that's heavy. Like, you know, that's pretty heavy. But to hear somebody say that is really remarkable. And then the other thing too, that, like you said, that got kind of emotional is like somebody asked, you know, who did you talk to your teammates after you signed? He's like, yeah, Cal and Matt were the first two people that I called up after, you know, told about the deal after his family. So like those people, he said, this team is his family. Like this is where he wants to be. This is his home. And those quotes and others stand in stark contrast to, you know, some others that we've heard. As there's a few theories about why Lou Lamoriello chose today to announce all these things. Somebody said, it's 9-1. I don't know that he's quite that petty. You know, maybe it's because it's September. Maybe it's back to school day for some people. I choose to believe that it was in celebration of Zendaya's birthday, which is today. So Lou, I'm sure, is a huge fan. She's a very talented lady. She's been in, the Disney Channel shows, and now she's in Spider-Man. She's in Dune coming up. She's a very talented lady, Zendaya, and today's her birthday. And I feel like this is Lou's way of saying, happy birthday, Zendaya. Here is our signings as a gift to you. But I don't know. That's my own working theory.
You know how in like movies the character Godfather-ish character kind of like Lou will do like these trust exercises to see like who like the rat is or whatever. He'll tell one person one thing, one person the other thing. I really wonder if all these guys kind of thought that, like, you know, you're not allowed to. It was like a test. It's like he was saying, like, look, you're not allowed to say anything till September, and if anyone does, we'll know who it is because, you know, somebody out there will, Dave Pagnotta is going to tweet it. Yeah. And if it's Dave Pagnotta, we know it's you, Anthony Beauvillier. Or if it's Michael Russo, we know it's you, Zach Parise.
We know who you are. I was going to say, I'm sure. There's a book to be written about how this all stayed secret for so long. But Cizikas, you know, and the other thing too is like, so it's a 6-year contract, which is obviously like a lot, but it's like to get it that cheap, it's got to be long. And Casey wanted to be here. And, you know, we talked about this before. Like, the thing about that line is that, you know, as good as they are together, Casey's really the guy that kind of makes the thing work. Not that Cal and, you know, Martin don't have their own personal skill sets, too. They do. But without Cizikas, that line ain't going to work. And, you know, they got Martin signed last year. Again, same kind of deal, 4-year contract. Seems like, why are you giving Matt Martin 4 years? Well, A, it's only $1.5 million a year, and B, the guy wants to stay. And so those two are now signed, and Clutterbuck is coming up on his final year. I expect him to sign. He'll probably get the same thing that Martin got, you know, 4 years, 1.5. Now, Cal is a couple of years older. He's 33. Martin is 32, and Cizikas is 30. So, you know, those guys, they play a bruising style, obviously. But, I mean, if they're going to keep it that low, and they want to be here and they are still effective, there's really no reason not to do that. Cal, you know, I think maybe was hurt the last couple of years, and he can stand to get a little bit healthy. So hopefully he did this summer. The other big one was Anthony Beauvillier. Again, 3-year contract. You know, 4.1 for a guy with his skill set is really, really good. He's gotten better defensively. He certainly can score offensively, although like guys like Brock Nelson and Josh Bailey, like they're known for having slumps, although I guess Nelson's kind of worked his way out of that phase. Bailey, not so much. You know, obviously, Beauvillier scored in the biggest Islander playoff goal in years in game 6 against the Lightning in the semifinals. You know, him and Palmieri and Sorokin, you know, the easy thing to look at the end and be like, not, I guess not so much Palmieri, but like to be like, okay, well, he's going to be a UFA in 3 years and be 27, which is like that prime age. You know that the Habs are going to come bringing every possible thing they can to Beauvillier, were he to reach UFA status at 27. Like they would literally give him everything that they could possibly give him to come over there. You know, does that mean he's leaving in 3 years? I don't know. Probably not. Maybe not. Who knows? We'll see. But that does give you a little bit of pause. Same with, you know, with Sorokin. It's just another problem kind of lay on there. But, you know, as our friend Carrie Haber has pointed out, for both of these guys, for all of these guys, the window to win is right now. So we don't need to worry about year 3. We need to worry about year next year, this coming year, maybe the year after, and, you know, even the year after, to see, you know, what they can do within the confines of the season. And if they can win a Stanley Cup in that time, and, you know, one of these guys walks as UFA, well, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. But they all recognize that their window to win is right now. And so if it means a little bit less, that Anthony Beauvillier takes a little bit less and the team has to give up a couple of years to make this work and keep that window open right now, they're going to do that. And so that, you know, that all these deals kind of fall into that kind of category for me. Like the window is right now. And they'll worry about year 3, you know, when they get there, and they'll figure it out. You know, with Sorokin, you could complain maybe that he doesn't have quite the NHL resume. It's really just the one, you know, half season, and really even, you know, played a half of that, really. But I think if you watched him, you saw that the skill is there. And the more he gets used to it, the more he gets used to the coaches, that $4 million a year could potentially be a real bargain for him, and that'll take him to, you know, 3 years. The UFA, Semyon Varlamov has 2 years left, so, you know, there'll be 1 year where it'll be Sorokin, and who knows. But yeah, you know, and all these, I think both of those guys are kind of on the same page, is like they got to keep that window open, and it's right now, and then they'll worry about it later on and see where we go. And, you know, it's immediate, like, again, we're all kind of traumatized by UFAs here, but you know, we'll worry about that then. And I think that's a valuable lesson for all of us to learn. Don't worry about it. Just we'll worry about that when we get there.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of key theme to this offseason for the Islanders, is like the Islanders got out of the Andrew Ladd contract, and they got out of it without, you know, really hurting themselves all that much.
It's really crazy. Like, I thought about that again today. I'm like, Andrew Ladd's not on this team anymore. It's just insane. Who would have thought? It's crazy.
And like even the Boychuk one, which worked out in a different way, but it's still, yeah, you know, like things are going to happen. Things are going to change. There's always a way out. And I think if what's scaring you off for a team like this is like years 5 and 6 of a Casey Cizikas contract, or year, you know, 5 of Palmieri, or however long he signed for, you know, you're probably going to lose the forest for the trees a bit. Like, yeah, there's clearly a contender here. They're going to be among the, you know, that mid fringe, like 20-1 range on to win the Stanley Cup. They're a lukewarm favorite to win the division. Like there's the, like you said, the window is now, the window is next year, and you hope the year after that. And it's much easier to keep a window open than to create one. Like, look at the Buffalo Sabres, look at the, and to create one as kind of stable as we're in right now too. Think about the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, do you think when they were giving out extensions, they're signing people in 2011, they were worried about 2017? No, they were just making the playoffs every year. And that also gives players incentives to cut you a deal that's friendly to the team. And that's something, once again, like if the Islanders wanted to get a free agent, Andrew Ladd, for example, they needed to overpay because, you know, this, it was a it's not a great place to come for your prospects of winning a Stanley Cup, or it wasn't at that point, at least. And now it's changed. So, like, that's what's so great about these deals. And we'll keep, you know, this, I think that's a great thing. Like, it's really nice because in sports, like, this is so rare still. Like, it's so rare to see, like, these guys commit to the team in this era of, like, player empowerment and whatever, which is all, you know, well and good. Like, go get the money you deserve. You hear it on every podcast, like, oh, I think, you know, this guy is going to walk because he wants to see what he's worth out there. And it might mean signing for the Anaheim Ducks or whatever, but you hear it all the time. And with the Islanders, it's never really what it is. Like, there's that possibility. But when the pre, like, offseason podcasts were coming out, it's like, you know, Casey Cizikas, he probably wants to know what he's worth, but in the end, he'll come back to the Islanders because this culture is probably worth more than that to him, to his bottom line. And then, yeah, like you said, with Sorokin and Beauvillier, I think are interesting for a couple of reasons. Because I think what the Beauvillier contract shows you is that, like you said, there's kind of understanding among everybody. Mm. This thing is like probably at least, you know, couple more years. We got a couple more cracks at this can. Because if he wanted to sign something, you know, long term or whatever, the Islanders probably would have to pay more and to get into his UFA years. If he did something short, it would have been a little scary, but like he's saying that, no, you know, I'm not just giving you one more year. Like, you'll see guys sign for that one year extension. Like, he's saying, oh, you know, I'll do three here and buy that year of UFA because it means that much to him too to kind of do it here. And like you said, who cares, you know, right now, who cares 3 years down the road who comes for him? And I think like the Sorokin deal was the big wild card of the whole offseason for the Islanders. Yeah. I think maybe outside of the Pelech deal, but you know, the fan base has fallen in love with him. He's played well enough for that to be not just, you know, a tongue in cheek thing. Like, he's been really, really good. He stole that game five. He won that Penguins series. Like, the Islanders don't get to where they got to without him.
Oh yeah. He literally won a playoff series.
Right. And people forget about it just because, you know, the Bruins series and the Lightning series are so epic too. And, then, you know, his like post-game interview, post-season interview where he was talking about the Josh Bailey song, which was just he's like such an endearing guy. And he gave this like really funny Russian media interview. And he's just like, this guy's, he seems great. So he reminds me a lot of Evgeny Nabokov, like his sense of humor and stuff. And I think when you look at goalies, you want to look at them combined. Like, so you're saying like, oh, $4 million might be a steal down the road for Ilya Sorokin. It might be too much. However you feel about it, what you want to do with goaltenders, especially now with the way teams split it, is you want to look at it together, right? So it's four for Sorokin, five for Varlamov, I believe. So you're talking about $9 million cap hit for your goalies for next season. And you look around the league, like the Islanders have one of the best goaltending tandems in the NHL, and it costs less than Sergei Bobrovsky. And it costs, you know, in the same range as, you know, a lot of other tandems that aren't as good. Like, there are teams with some troubling goaltending situations, and the Islanders aren't one of them. And, you know, it's nine. I would pay the nine, 10, 11, whatever million dollars against the cap for that, to have that kind of peace of mind. And, so I can't really poke any holes in any of these deals. It's something. And you know, Lou's back. I know that like hockey Twitter loves to go and make fun of the back-to-back GM of the year stuff. But I mean, I don't really know, considering the wall he was back up against, who's had a more impressive offseason than this management team, because they got out of this knife fight like unscathed somehow.
Yeah. This has got to be one of the more successful off seasons the Islanders have had in a long time. You know, you got these signings here, you've got the jettisoning of Andrew Ladd, which was a thing that I think a lot of us didn't think was going to happen. They traded Nick Leddy, and we'll talk about the defense in the second half and how that's shaped up a little bit lately. They haven't quite replaced Leddy yet, but again, getting him off the books was kind of a big deal. They, you know, let Jordan Eberle go to Seattle, which, you know, was hard to watch, but I think we can kind of agree was probably the best possible you know, outcome of that, aside from like losing somebody that wasn't on the roster, like a, you know, like a Thomas Hickey or somebody like that. And then they turn around, you know, and signed Palmieri, which, you know, to me again was the guy probably more than the other three. I thought would kind of walk. Yeah, he had a good time when he was here. Yes, he's from the island, but I could see somebody coming up and being like, hey, why don't we, you know, maybe Seattle would be like, hey, why don't you come play here and we'll give you $6 or $7 million a year. But he signed for $5 million, which was a shade under Eberle's 5.5. He signed for 4 more years, which was one more than I think Eberle had on his thing. And, you know, he's a pretty versatile guy. Now, you know, as great as he was in the playoffs, let's not forget the 17 games he had with 2 goals prior to the playoffs. And, you know, last year was a fairly down season for him. But I think now with the familiarity, he's going to have a full training camp with them. They're going to have, obviously, a brand new building at some point, and he's got 4 years to go. I think that you'll see a much more comfortable and probably a much more productive Kyle Palmieri. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to find fault. I mean, you know, loyal listeners to this show will know that we could pretty much find fault with anything, or at least find some kind of dark cloud looming in the distance. And we've given a couple, but I mean, honestly, it's very hard to be this satisfying, you know, and once the deal for Zach Parise comes to fruition, and the estimable Michael Russo of The Athletic has already tweeted that it has in fact happened, it just hasn't been registered yet. We're assuming it's for the minimum, you know, or maybe something like $1 million, something not, you know, too much. You know, that'll be another feather in their cap. And, you know, as I tweeted, yes, he's 100 years old and he's not what he was, but it will feel great to right a wrong that never should have happened from, what was it, 17 years ago, 18 years ago? I don't even.
Yeah, 2003. I mean,
God, it's just
18 you know, years in the making for this, yeah, one.
It'll feel nice. And whatever he does, I don't care. Like, just the fact that he's here, he's here and it is done. That is one skeleton we can take out of the closet and just throw it in the trash and be done with it. You know, it finally happened. So, you know, it's a pretty successful offseason, all things considered.
I don't know why, but a couple of months ago, maybe this was before the last season, I was watching the 2003 entry draft on NHL Network. And because it was basically, you know, they were just talking about how, you know, legendary that draft class was. It's just with all the stars that have come out of it. And then there's always the talk about, like, it was like Hugh Jessamine for the Rangers. And then they talk about Robert Nilsson and the Islanders. And it's just, like you said, it's just when you watch that draft, obviously Pierre Maguire, before going viral was a thing, kind of went hockey viral with his lamenting about Zach Parise not, like, falling down the board. And then when the Islanders didn't pick him, he someone had to lift him off the floor and, like, resuscitate him with the things, the paddles, because he just couldn't believe that the team had his dad. He was a perfect fit, and they'd get Robert Nilsson. And, you know, I was thinking about Parise today, and just had the Islanders drafted, and then, like, you know, they probably wouldn't get Ryan Smith. Like, that era of Islanders would have been so different. And it would have changed everything. He was, like, a good enough player, especially in his prime, that it would have changed everything. Like, they probably wouldn't get Tavares because they wouldn't have been that bad. Josh Bailey, of course, would come. He was destined. The second Josh Bailey was born, he was destined for the Islanders. Right. You know, it's so funny to think about that. And now, yeah, like you said, it's after so many fits and starts, it's he's here. And I it's so funny that you said that, like, you don't care what he does. Like, I thought the same exact thing. I started laughing, thinking, like, you know, you could just see him, like, going the way of Brian Ralston did when he was here. but the attitude would just be so different. Like, there are people lining up to drive Brian Ralston to whatever, you know, destination he wanted to be traded to at that trade deadline. Whereas Parise, I don't think so. I think it'll be very different. And, you know, I think it's going to take him 30 seconds to become an Islander. Like,
oh yeah.
And he'll say it, like, right after, like, Pageau did. And then I think he's going to love it here. Like, that guy, this part of his career, you know, with the history he has with the team and stuff, it's going to be great. I think, it's something that is not just great fodder for fans, but, I mean, the column inches that some of these national writers are going to be able to get out of Zach Parise is just going to be so great. Like, they're probably, you know, drooling over themselves a little bit.
So it's
as long as it doesn't come out that he signed, like, an 11-year deal worth $7 million. Like
it's that not, is the thing. Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, but, assuming he signs for
right.
the minimum or something, you know, again, $1 million, I could totally buy it. It's fine.
The Andy Green treatment, where, right. where you know, the, all of a sudden we all thought he had like $2 million of bonuses against the cap, and it wasn't that because some right. I don't know. Like, it, I think he'll probably get that, and it's just it's.
Right.
I mean, welcome finally.
Right.
Welcome to the party.
And I think it's a good spot for him too. I mean, again, this is very being very optimistic, but you know, he's not going to need to carry anything. He's not going to need to be the face of the franchise. If he can, you know, skate on a third line role, be productive, be defensively responsible and chip in on the power play, especially on the power play. Like, I think a lot of us will, for, you know, there might be some people out there, we don't need this guy, you know. If he starts scoring power play goals, I think we'll all understand why he was brought in. But, you know, for the price and for the, you know, the spot. And again, getting back to what we said before, like, he wouldn't sign here if he didn't think they were going to win. Like, he's not just going to leave and come here. You know, I mean, I think if the Islanders were not particularly good, I don't think he would have come here, and he would have signed with, you know, LA or something like
that. Yeah, or it would be treated differently. It would have been treated yeah. like, you know, hey, like when right. – Patrick Marleau signed somewhere or something or whatever. They're like, oh yeah, like he'll be traded at the deadline or something.
Yeah.
Like he's, you know, he's just going to get the reps in until he gets traded to go right. find, try to, you know, hook up with whatever team at the, is contending. But yeah. I mean, the way that the deal has been treated and all these deals have been treated is even from last summer, like very different. Like the whole, it seems like finally, like that the Islanders have earned actual respect, like, and like full-blown respect at this point. And this is the way that the offseason was handled, from the not releasing the signings to the fact that like can you imagine the circus that would have happened if, like, after like 5 days in like the 2011 offseason with like Garsnow in charge, if the Islanders hadn't announced anything, like this is the absolute circus, God. Like that yeah. would be going on, because it'd be like, oh, well, the Islanders probably, like, their fax machine must be down or something. Right. Like, here it's no, like, this Lou has a plan here, and like people are treating it like it's smart business. And it kind of was. And it rubbed the people that we like to rub the wrong way too. So like that was an added bonus. And
yeah, seriously.
It's just, it's really interesting. Like the, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to, you know, just kind of take a big 30,000 picture view of things, but you look at it now and the Islanders just, when they were on the ice, like, people would be nice and talk about them, be like, oh, they're playing well, Barry Trotz, great coach, et cetera, et cetera. But now it's like literally everything that they're doing now is earning praise from people right. who you respect.
Yeah. It's cool. It's cool to see. Speaking of trades and stuff, before we take a break and go into the second half, I just noticed that none of these guys have any sort of trade protection. You know, no movement clauses, no modified, no trade clauses, none of that kind of stuff. Not that I'm sure Lou is, you know, looking to trade any of these guys, but that could be potentially something to look for, you know, again, once they get towards the end of these contracts, which is going to be for a while. You know, it's just another kind of Lou Lamoriello thing. Like, he doesn't really do that. I mean, Anders Lee kind of got that. Nelson did, Pageau did, but I mean, it's not really the kind of thing that, you know, normally there are teams that give these things out like candy. Like, the Flames, for whatever reason, are always giving out no trade clauses. And then it's always like they have to sweeten a deal to get rid of somebody to move them on. So just one more layer that works in the Islanders' favor. Okay. We are going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the defense, including the guy who signed a while back. I guess we could have done an episode, but it didn't seem like it made sense to do one episode on him and then waiting for the other stuff. But we'll talk about him now because he's earned it. So come back in a couple of minutes. Plus, we got a whole bunch of other topics to talk about. So come back in a couple of minutes. All right. Thanks.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Our favorite sponsor is still VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. They also have hats. They've got all kinds of stuff. You should really check out Vintage Ice Hockey. It's amazing. Our friend Kevin does a great job there. They're always there up. They're always adding new stuff. And they also have our Al Arbor t-shirts. And if you buy one, our entire portion goes directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You can also use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 to save 15% off your order. That is at VintageIceHockey.com. Get it now so you're ready for the season. And check it out all year long. Okay, breaking news. So I was on Cap Friendly when I said that there were no moving clauses or anything in those previous contracts. And then as soon as I said that, Mike pointed out that Cap Friendly amended their page to say that actually Palmieri does have a full no movement clause in the first 2 years and then a modified one in the second two. So one guy, I thought that was kind of weird. I'm like, boy, guys his age usually get that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But in any event, so he's the only guy, I guess, with the modified no move clause. But, you know, I guess that makes a little bit of sense. But anyway, so there you go. Breaking news. I'm not going to go back and edit out what I just said because it was true at the time. And then it was not in the middle of our commercial break. So we alluded before to the fact that there was a signing earlier in the summer, and it was the team's probably biggest RFA and certainly most important defenseman. It was Adam Pellick, who signed an 8-year deal worth $5.75 million a year. Now, this deal came before arbitration. They had arbitration, I think, 2 days later, but as usual, these things get signed just before that. And, you know, there was a lot of kind of wondering what kind of contract Adam Pellick would get. He's primarily a defensive player. He doesn't really have a whole lot of offensive stats to speak about, but he's so good defensively and is such a linchpin to what the Islanders do that he's this kind of rare unicorn in the NHL that just is a black hole of other teams' offense. He just soaks up whatever the other players are doing and just, you know, deposits it in some other dimension somewhere. And not a lot of guys can do that. And, you know, what would a guy like that get paid now? We just don't have players like that much anymore. Well, the answer, at least for Lou Lamoriello, is $5.75 million a year for the next 8 years. And which is, I mean, maybe amongst all of these things, probably the best contract they signed. You know, 5.75 is not nothing, but if you look at other deals for other defensemen in this league, you know, Seth Jones is making like, what is it, $8 million, $7 million, something like that?
Yeah.
Guys are making a lot
of money. Rowenski's nine.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot. I didn't see what Parayko was, but I saw he was 8 years today. And like,
yeah,
that was
Parayko is six something.
Yeah. That was the theme of the, you know, that couple weeks of the offseason was that all these defensemen were flying off the shelves at exorbitant prices.
It's crazy. And so here comes Adam Pellick in 8 years. Like, you know, this is a long time now. It's going to put him well over a decade in blue and orange for a very reasonable 5.75. And like, I just laughed when they tweeted that. I think it was Elliot Friedman or maybe even Arthur Staple. I'm not even sure who had it first. I just laughed. I laughed because I'm just like, that's an absurd deal. And that was really the first, I think, domino in the whole, you know, what we saw today, which was like, guys know that this team is good. Their window is now. They want to be here now. And if taking a haircut, you know, I mean, he's still making 5.75. Let's be honest. But like, he could have probably squeezed them for six or seven, and he would rather take a deal that's a little bit more modest to allow other guys to sign and keep the thing going. And that's just unbelievable. And like, that's crazy. And I know some people were like, well, you know, he didn't have the offensive numbers. Well, he wouldn't have gotten that high probably anyway. Yeah, maybe not. But dude, it's still the NHL. Guys get crazy contracts all the time that don't deserve it. Like, it just happens all the time. And this guy could have gotten one of those, and he didn't, because he wanted to stay here. And he was honest, and he wanted to stay. And so, Adam Pellick, we salute you. I don't know what else to say. Like, this, it's just awesome. And if he can continue to be as good as he is, or even, God forbid, get better, the Islanders are going to be, this is going to be one of the best contracts in the league for a very, very long time.
We talk about like the Islanders being an outlier a lot, in the way they run things, the way they're treated, the way they play, the fact that their kind of predictive analytics don't really tell the whole story, just all this stuff. And one other thing is that all you hear about from the second the Stanley Cup is awarded to right before free agency, and by the way, basically all year, is comps. You hear, you know, the league is run on comps. The I'm Brady Tkachuk. I want this because, you know, this guy got this deal. Corey Perry got this deal. Whatever it is, for the Islanders, that seems to not matter. And the players have kind of said that too. Like Cizikas said today, he wasn't looking around at anybody else's deals because, as we read today in that article, like, you know, Sean Corrali and Barclay Goodrow, like those guys were getting paid pretty good money for basically the same kind of role as Cizikas. And like we just said before, the defensemen were, the market for defensemen was just bananas, and he's was very reasonable. And he said it when he got interviewed, saying like, you know, we didn't look at that because this is where I want to be. And that is different from a lot of other teams. Like, it's just the way it is. Like the Islanders are, they're not, you know, I know that it's a business and sports is a business or whatever, but they're not really run that way. It doesn't feel like that a lot of the times because of the small, tight knit fan base and kind of the fact that they're just like in the suburban sprawl. But with other teams, like, it's just, that's not really possible. Like, look at what happened with Mitch Marner. Like, look at those deals. Like, those guys knew that they could squeeze the Leafs for every penny because, you know, the Leafs, not only do they have the money and like the market share, but like, if the Leafs don't do what, you know, if they didn't sign those guys, it would have been a national calamity. Same with the Canadians. Like, if they weren't able to bring back, you know, Jeff Petrie, if he was a free agent or something, in Adam Pellick's shoes, it would have been a huge deal. So like, there is much more leverage here. Whereas like, you know, if Casey Cizikas or Adam Pellick don't really push the Islanders like that, no one's going to notice. It's not like going to be this sports talk radio stuff for right. hours and hours every day. So it's just like, the Islanders are just very different in so many ways. And right now it's a good thing. Like, it's really, it's nice that people are, the players understand this and respect it. And, that, you know, there is a lot to really enjoy about playing for this team when they're good. That could just be why it's worth, you know, signing for less dollars for more long-term commitment, as we've seen from these guys. And, it's kind of like the Palmieri thing for sure. Like, so many things had to go right for him to stick around, but it seemed clear from the get-go that he was willing to wait that out. Like, he was willing to see if those things did break his way, because he wanted to be here. And you know, even Pellick the same way too. Like, he could have, you know, done the 1 year deal thing and, you know, just kicked the can to next summer and gone through this whole exercise, and he had much more leverage than he ended up like utilizing, and didn't, because of probably the intangibles of living on Long Island as a really rich person and being, you know, and raising a family here and playing for Barry Trotz and, you know, all this stuff. Like, there's so many things that, you know, these guys weigh, and it's nice that they deem them valuable enough to not go chase, you know, the six million or 10 million or whatever they could have got on the open market.
Yeah. All that, you know, it's that's what it comes down to. And, you know, as far as Adam Pellick with that defense, so he'll be back. Ryan Pulock has to be, this is his final year. He needs to be re-signed. He'll be a UFA at the end of next season. That's the next big one that we're going to sweat out this season. And we have to hope that, you know, the Islanders can find a way to sign him. You know, they got some guys coming off the books next year. Leo Komarov is going to come off the books next year. And again, Cal Clutterbuck, I assume, will be re-signed for probably less than he's making now. So they'll have to figure it out. Scott Mayfield is back. He's got two more years before he's in UFA. Noah Dobson is obviously still here. He'll need a new contract next year too. The one thing though, and obviously Johnny Boychuk comes off the books next year, but he's going to go on LTIR this year to make a little bit more room. One thing about the defense though that's weird is that they did trade Nick Leddy and haven't really replaced him. You know, we kind of figured that they would sign somebody. A lot of the guys we thought they would sign all went other places. Jack Johnson today signed with the Avalanche. So if you were worried that the Islanders might, you know, pick up Jack Johnson, one of the most reviled players in the entire league, you can rest easy. He's Colorado's problem until he's next year. Somebody's problem next year, probably. So that's kind of a weird thing. I mean, we're assuming that, you know, Parisi will be announced at some point. Is somebody else lurking out there? Who knows? You know, Zdeno Chara hasn't signed with anybody yet. He's 40 whatever years old. He's still effective, but I mean, is that a guy the Islanders have on their radar? Would he even want to come back here? Imagine killing those two birds in the same stone, the same summer. Parisi and Chara. Go figure. I don't know if we could take it. I don't know if we could stand it. You know, there are some internal options. Thomas Hickey's still here. Sebastian Aho is still here. You've got guys like Robin Sallow and Samuel Bulldog, who had good seasons last year in Europe and the AHL. Don't think that they're quite ready. Arthur mentions that in his article. So that's kind of the weird thing that's hanging out here. As good as this offseason has been, I think as good as we can all feel as fans, there is kind of that spot in the lineup on the left side in the second defensive pairing. Maybe it's Thomas Hickey to start the season. Maybe they're going to do that and just kind of start with either Hickey or Aho to start the season and then see where it goes. And then, you know, maybe fix the problem if it arises, maybe platoon both of them. I don't know. So, you know, that's kind of the one thing that's sort of hanging out there to be like, what are they doing with this? But then again, you know, you could listen to this and then tomorrow morning on Thursday morning, they could just sign somebody and the whole thing becomes moot. But that's the one question mark we really have right now. If you're plotting out this lineup, who lines up next to Scott Mayfield in that second defensive pairing, and can they be as effective as Nick Leddy?
What it costs too, right? Like,
yes,
is it going to cost, if it costs Josh Bailey, like then all of a sudden the entire offseason changes, the mood of the offseason changes, and it, right. You know, it becomes ruthless. And but like, it's just, I think if they're able, first of all, I actually think the Aho, Hickey, Bulldog, like having those options, sure, they're not going to blow you up the page right now, but like at least they have, you know, some options. And if somebody wins that role, it means that they're playing well. So that's, I'm not like, it's a flaw for sure. Like, and it's a, if it's not addressed, it's a big problem, and I'd be pretty upset with Lou, but like right now, like it's not like we're 40 games into the season. You can definitely see how things shake out, and they're, they bought themselves time by filling out the rest of the roster. Like, they're so deep everywhere else, at least until, you know, to start, that, and the goaltending's good enough that it's not a fatal flaw. Like, you look around the division, there's a lot of teams with much bigger problems than the Islanders have in their second left D spot. And so that is at least encouraging, but yeah, it's gotta be addressed. And hopefully, you know, well, I think what we saw was there were some, you know, when during the Cone of Silence era, there was some, there were some jokes like, you know, who the Islanders could really use right now is Nick Leddy. And it's sure, like, he would fit right back in on that spot. But as we can see now, if they had his contract on the books,
right,
it would have been a pretty big problem. So it is what, you know, in that, with where is Leddy's concerned, it is what it is. And yeah, you know, it's the type of thing you just got to kind of wait and see. We also like don't know who else has signed contracts with the Islanders. Like, we don't know about Dal Cole. It seems like he's on board. Ajax on board.
Bellows, Koivula, yeah. All those guys. Yeah.
So. And like, there could be a couple, you know, depth defensemen there too, or we don't know how much cap space they'll have left after those guys. Like, you know, the Cone of Silence, yes, it's been lifted, but like we're, it's still very vague. Things are very vague around the Islanders still. And it's nice. It's kind of funny that way, but, yeah, I'm expecting things to be addressed, because this offseason, that's kind of been the theme of, like, you know, the Islanders had a checklist. It was trade Nick Leddy, get Jordan Eberle's contract off the books to Seattle, get Andrew Ladd's contract off the books, bring back all the RFAs and Palmieri, and all those things have been taken care of. So at this point, at least, there's no reason to not believe that the next thing, and perhaps most important thing left on the checklist, it definitely is the most important thing left on the checklist, is to sign that second pair defenseman on the left side.
Maybe one day we'll do a pessimistic outlook episode, and we'll just like say, okay, well, in 2 years they're gonna have to trade this guy to make room for this, you know. But
glass half empty. Exactly. I do catch myself like glowing, and I'm like, it almost makes me a little sick. when I'm like, you know, just like so optimistic about this yeah. team. Like it's making me a little uneasy
right now. There is no reason to be, but yeah, I was talking about the defense and assuming that the person would be a free agent, but yeah, you just brought up a good point. Like what if they address that spot with a trade and then all of a sudden it's like, now this very good offseason just became a little bit less good. But yeah, so there's your roster as of September 1st, just before 8 o'clock in the evening. So we'll see what happens when you listen to this episode on Thursday, September 2nd. Okay, real quick, we're going to talk about something that I think most podcasters have to talk about at some point, which is when somebody takes words you've said and makes an off-Broadway play about them. It's a very common thing amongst podcasters. As we all know, this happens all the time. And it's our turn, basically. It became our turn this summer. I'm going to cede the floor mainly to you because you saw Islander, the play, and we want to hear your thoughts on it. You know, there's some articles about it. It's weird to see that, you know, people took, again, your things you said. I don't remember half the things we say on this podcast at all. And, you know, I'm sitting here saying them right now. So it is a little bit weird that somebody wrote them down and then had some actor say it. But, you know, you actually took it in and saw it. So, I mean, let's hear it. What are your thoughts about the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, the experience itself, like of like you, what you said, like someone – taking the podcast and using it verbatim for an off-Broadway play about the season that John Tavares left. It was a little bit like a fever dream watching it. Like you're just, I was like, there was one point in the play where I thought that the spotlight was just going to shine on me. And like a bunch of people that like in my life, were going to come out from backstage and be like, we got you. Like you deserve this, like for what you did back then. Like this is a huge over the top prank that was funded and everything. But because like there were parts of it where I was just like watching, you hear parts of the podcast and like, whoa, like a little weird. But I think like you and I both had a legitimate gripe with the first New York Times article that came out. Like I think it was very legitimate and it's okay to be upset about stuff like that. But I didn't want to say anything until I actually saw the play, because the way that article had kind of made it seem was that this was a play kind of condemning the Islander fan base and bucketing them all into this one group of, white toxic males. And since the podcast was mentioned, like if you read that article, you would have thought if you were, you know, a Carolina Hurricanes fan and you're like, wow, this is weird. Someone wrote an off-Broadway play about the Islanders. And then you read that article, you're like, oh, it's about this fan base being, you know, these crazy, you know, over the top, white toxic males. And this podcast, Islanders Anxiety, must be exactly what, you know, must be the ringleaders. Like they must be the worst guys on the planet. And so, you know, you read that, like it didn't sit right at all. Like I had a lot of people texting me and also like we should say a lot of people tweeted at like the article and were like stood up for us, which was really kind of encouraging to hear and to read. So I wanted to see it before, like, you know, I went and, you know, called a bunch of lawyers or something. And like, I did, and it wasn't like what you thought. Like it wasn't some, you know, reductionist like thing where it's like making fun of, you know, sports fans for being, or Islander fans specifically for being these, like, I don't know, crazy lunatics and bad people. And it seemed much more genuine than it was. Like I thought it was just going to be some sermon and or like just somebody reading and like using, you know, cultural buzzwords and stuff about kind of the culture of sports and sports fandom, which we know can be pretty terrible at times, especially for, you know, women and people of color, etc. Like we understand that. And I was very nervous, like for that reason, that we were going to be branded as part of the problem. And nobody really was branded as part of any problem. It was just like literally about a person, a big Islander fan who was going through kind of the roller coaster ride of John Tavares this last season. But he only spoke in verbatim dialogue to like out loud to nobody in particular for most of the play, just like literally to the crowd, kind of like weighing the existential crisis of losing the most important person in his life, which was John Tavares, which is true for a lot of us. Like at the time, like this, he was one of the most important people in our lives. And, that's what the play was. And if it was branded as that, like, here's like these Islander fans and like kind of the depths of themselves trying to like reason with what this situation, I think a lot of Islander fans would have went and saw it. Like I would see that play. Like, Right. Can you imagine if just like one day you woke, you read in the New York Times that someone wrote a play about John Tavares, like an Islander fan coming to grips with John Tavares leaving. Like if it was branded like that, everybody who listens to this podcast would at least think about being like, I think I should go see it because it's about me. Right. And it kind of was. And like, and that's what that was the problem with the way the article came out, was like, yes, this play was ultimately about us. Like, it was about you. It was about me. It was about everybody reading. It was about Chris King. It was about anybody who's like emotionally invested in this team and how like that situation kind of unfolded and we were portrayed in it. But then they did this weird, kind of, I don't want to say it was insulting, like, but it kind of was like a press tour, press piece and whatever. And, we saw like a couple of days ago, like the people who run the play. Oh, and by the way, I met the writer afterwards. And we were talking and she was super nice and saying she was a big fan of the podcast and still listens. And I was like, the reason I'm here is because I was afraid like that this play was going to paint me in a terrible light. And she felt bad about that.
Yeah.
And so I should say like, she was super, super, super nice. Eliza Birkenmeyer, I believe her name is. And so seeing that, like, and talking to her afterwards, I left and I called you immediately after as I was so goddamn confused because not only is the play like, the play is very abstract and it's definitely, got some fun like theater techniques in it if you're into that thing, but if you're an Islander fan and you live through that, you would get a lot more out of it than I think those folks would. But I called you immediately afterwards because I was just couldn't really wrap my head around what just happened for a number of reasons, and the most important one being that this wasn't some takedown piece of Islander fans. It was much more of a kind of like look under the microscope of a fan going through a tough time of being a fan.
Yeah. That the phone call was really weird. Cause I mean, when I picked up, I was like, oh, I hope he's okay. I hope Mike's not calling me from like jail or something. Although I assume you would have called your wife if you were in this situation like that.
Not but, in this situation. I said probably would have been you. Anyways.
Yeah. Actually that makes more sense, I guess. But, the way you explained it was, a lot different than how, especially that first New York Times article came out, which, when you see your podcast mentioned in the New York Times in an article that quotes, toxic fan masculinity, you're just like, that's very odd, Mike and I we try very hard in this show in particular to offer kind of an alternate view of sports podcasts. Like, we were just really two guys just yapping. Like, we'll be the first to tell you we have no idea what we're talking about. We're just two friends that like to talk about the Islanders and we get very worried about them and how they affect our happiness level, probably to an unhealthy degree. And so we just find this as like a kind of a very low-key endeavor, and I think a lot of people appreciate that. And so that was a very weird thing to read in the New York Times of all places. And then I read a couple of other reviews. There was one at Vulture, which I think was actually New York Magazine. There was one in the Times as well that mentioned the same kind of stuff and how like ridiculous and how uproariously strange and funny it was. And I'm like, are they making fun of it? Like, do they understand that like there's a real person, there are real people behind these lines that they said, and like, we're here, man, we're still doing this. Like, I'm assuming that they probably didn't and probably didn't really care all that much. But what the way you laid it out was made me feel a lot better knowing that, you know, it wasn't like, because this is probably absolutely terrible, but I'm sure I'm not the first person who've thought this. There's the episode of Seinfeld with Kathy Griffin, and she had been in another episode before, and now she's back, and she has like a one woman play, basically calling Jerry Seinfeld the devil, like, and how he's like derailed her comedy career and told her, like, you know, she should go back to. And so that was when I read the New York Times article, the first thought was like, wait, am I living through that Seinfeld episode where Kathy Griffin has a one woman play and like trashes Jerry and the whole thing? And fortunately, to make a long story short, no, we don't, which thankfully, you know, you told me about. So, yeah, so this has been a very odd experience.
So crazy.
Yeah.
There were two quick things too. Like, yeah, the weirdest part was watching it and being like, oh, I wouldn't remember saying that. But when someone else said it, I'm like, oh, I remember saying that. I remember lines that you would say and that they took from you, and just seeing that, that's very strange to see you become a character in a one person. and it's funny too, because as fans, like, especially with now with like Amazon and everything, like when fan bases or teams get selected for these like all or nothings or whatever, it's exciting. Like, that's cool. You got to look behind the curtain. You get to see like Quest for the Cup, whatever. As fans, we love it. Like, the Islanders version of All or Nothing just ended up being a one person play off Broadway, which is kind of hilarious in a way, and very, very appropriate for the Islanders and I guess this podcast. But the one thing I do want to say, like, that I give them a lot of credit for is the line, like, there is a character that plays John Tavares, and I guess I can spoil it because it's not going to be on Broadway. Anyway, it's like a little kid.
Yeah, no, I did read that. Yeah.
And, but the quotes that they pulled, which were from the game when he returned in February, he says the word obviously like 100 times, and I was cracking up because it's like, this is John Tavares talking, like, but it's just a little kid saying what John Tavares said after he got chased out of Nassau Coliseum. Like, it was. That was very absurd too.
That's funny.
But yeah, you know, we come in peace. Apparently they came in peace. The New York Times tried to not get them to come in peace, but it ended up being okay.
That's really funny. That's really funny. That's a good way to put it. I'm glad you put it that. That does make a lot of sense. Also, that's my bit, making fun of John Tavares by saying obviously 100 times. So there you go. Thus ends. Well, I guess it doesn't end because there's still a few more days left in the play, but thus ends the very unique.
I honestly would say to see it. Like, if you asked me, should I see it or not? I would say yes, just because it is a kind of a funny just thing to experience. But I don't know if you would like it or not, because it is very much a, like I said, abstract kind of thing. But as an Islander, I would say Islander fans should go see it. If you have, or if you somehow just stumbled on this podcast, I have no idea what you're talking about. I wouldn't say normal people should see it.
Yeah. I mean, there must be a cross section of Islanders and Broadway fans. Like, that's a thing. I mean, I'm more of a movie TV guy than a Broadway guy. You know, I'm sure there's a cross section somewhere. There's a Venn diagram of Broadway fans and Islanders fans. So yeah, if you have a chance, you still got a few days, so go check it out. So yeah, there you go. We're going to close up in a minute. You know, we'll be back, I'm sure, at some point once the Parisi contract is filed and whoever else is going to show up. You're going to be away for the weekend, so it won't be for a couple of days. Maybe we'll try next week or the week after. But I do want to give one particular shout out. So in our last episode, we talked about the schedule, and we talked about, you know, if you're a Seattle based Islanders fan, I don't know if we have any, you know, this will be your chance to finally go see your team play in your town. And I got a very nice DM on Twitter by a listener named John Tutty, who said that he's not in Seattle. He's in Portland. And he, you know, just want to thank us for the podcast. He's holding down the Islanders fan fort in the great city of Portland, Oregon. And I meant to shout him out the next episode. And the next episode turned out to be this one, which was 2 months after he texted me. He DM'd me. So, John, thank you very much for the shout out. Thanks for keeping the Islanders spirit alive out in Portland. And maybe you can get up to Seattle and check out a game. I totally meant to make this like a surprise shout out that you would have heard the week after. I did not expect the week to be 2 months long. So there you go. But thank you very much. Really appreciate you listening. Really appreciate all of our listeners. And we appreciate you waiting all this time for Islanders news and then letting us talk about it on this very oddly timed podcast episode. So
just
there you go.
One more really quick thing. It is funny too with these podcast, like with a podcast that you truly have no idea who's listening. So it's nice to hear from people. And we just got a perfect example of, of that. And it literally manifested itself in a one person play. So it is always nice to hear from people because it's nice to know who you are talking to.
Yeah. Yeah. It is great.
And, sometimes they end up being Broadway or off Broadway playwriters.
Yeah. So there you go. The next step, obviously, to this would be a musical of us.
Yeah. And then I said Macho.
Yeah. That would be something too. Yeah. So please don't set our words to music. That's the only thing I'm going to say. Please don't do that. That would be very, there's enough musicals out there that don't need to exist. We don't need one more, but, thank you very much. John, again, thanks for listening. And, thanks to everybody for checking us out. We'll be back again. I don't know if we would necessarily call this the first episode of the next season. We'll probably do that eventually and do some sort of like whatever preview or something once training camp rolls around. But, it's nice to be back. It's good. It's great to be back. You know, like in the words of Cheech Marin in Ghostbusters, better late than never. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date news and discussion. Read Mike at the Action Network. Read his work over there. You're on some NFL stuff, I heard now, right? Or at least editing some NFL stuff. Is that...
Yeah, just editing. Most of the stuff I actually produce is either NHL or soccer and darts.
Which has also just begun. So
yes,
the soccer season. Yeah. So there you go. Arsenal already in the toilet. So Dom, I'm sorry. That's all I know. All I know is I wake up every Saturday and everybody's like, oh, Arsenal stinks. Sorry. Okay, sure. There you go. But yeah, we're all still here. And it's September. You can smell the hockey around the corner. Make sure you watch your... UBS Arena live feed. It's getting close. They're hanging the scoreboard. They're getting the seats up. It's very exciting. I don't know how they're going to finish that thing by November.
They're going to have so many statues to build. This is Zizekas. This is Pelinic now. It's just so many statues.
They should just hang Zizekas's number while you guys are up there. Just put a 53 up there.
While he's like, just wait for the right moment for him to like be dinging a puck out of the corner and all of a sudden just unveil it while he's forechecking the hell out of the Rangers or something. The
band strikes up and it's like they pull the thing down. Oh my God, they put it up there. It's crazy. That's like some Vince McMahon shit right there. But we could do that. That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. Have a great Labor Day. And check out Shang-Chi that comes out this weekend. I'll be there. I can't wait. I'm very excited for this. And we'll talk to you guys when we talk to you next time. All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.